Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, David Slack.
Morena, Rosetta and Millie.
Morena.
How are you?
I'm very safe and sound. We've got a whole lot of water that we stored and didn't need for the cyclone that didn't hurt us, and unlike some people, I'm not feeling cheated that I wasn't maimed.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we're not really talking about that today, but worth touching on, I guess, the fact that there has been a lot of interesting kōrero after the storm has passed from people about whether we were too intense with the warnings.
And it seems bizarre, doesn't it, that you would take precautions knowing that it might or might not happen. That's the nature of managing risk, that it's not a certainty, it's a possibility, and you're just taking care for in the event of the possibility. And God, if anybody was around here for the anniversary weekend floods a couple of years ago, they would know that sometimes it can absolutely astound you. And you know, we live in this little dot in the bottom of the South Pacific that's beset by weather in all directions, and it is not possible to say exactly what's going to happen, but you can say there's some bad shit looming here potentially, and it just seems common sense that you make sound preparations. And, you know, there's another irony here too, and I really am going off on this when we had something else to talk about, but they do relate a little bit. And that is, you've had certain elected officials also taking that view, oh, it was just woke calling states of emergency and that kind of thing. And there is a kind of a attitude at play here that is essentially denialism, that likes the way things are or were and doesn't want to acknowledge that things have changed and new dangers have emerged and that we need to prepare for them and adapt to them. And the further irony of this is that, because in the largest extent, I'm talking about climate change, there's huge possibility and potential for us to transform the economy in a really profoundly rewarding way because of it. And why the hell would you deny yourself the chance to get rich? It's nuts.
Speaking of getting rich, or maybe just having always been rich, we've got these. You want to talk about these rich guys and their political stances?
Yeah, there's a collection of different names that have been getting, you know, steadily more attention, it feels, over the recent years, because first they get noticed for being rich and being in the social pages, but some of them then start getting column inches in the media for the views that they might have. And I suppose in a way what triggered it for me was a piece last week interviewing Matthew Horncastle of Williams Corporation, who's made a lot of money out of property development, asking, "Would you consider being Prime Minister? Because we, notwithstanding the evidence of the current debacle, there still seems to be this attitude that if somebody's rich, they can make us all show us all how to be rich if we make them Prime Minister. Didn't work with John Key particularly. Certainly isn't working with this guy." But the attitude remains amongst some reporters, it seems, that if somebody's rich, they must know what to do. And it's a delusion, you know. Politics and leadership is much more about many other aspects of life besides how to make a loot. What we've been seeing with people like this guy and with Troy Bowker, who is an investment dude, and Nick Mowbray, whose family has made lots of money out of plastic tat, and also Jim Gunon, who has taken a big stake in NZME and is kind of now able to call some of the editorial shots, although that's a somewhat contested contention, I'll admit. But nonetheless, the reason he's in there is because he thinks the news media needs to achieve some sort of balance that he believes is missing, Jim Grenon, and that's particularly to do with co-governance and climate consensus and vaccines. And the drumbeat amongst all of these people is that the media is captured by the left and the right voices are not being heard, and we keep hearing them. Mm. These guys get this inordinate attention. Mm. And if there's one thing that I think is sort of foundational to all of that they're saying, it's and it's implicit rather than express, I'm rich, so I'm obviously right. And the certitude that comes with this is kind of a delusion, I would suggest. Now, Elizabeth Warren, the senator in the US, gave a great campaign speech some years ago about this, saying that no matter what you've created yourself, so many others helped to create the system that allowed you to thrive. Somebody invested in roads and bridges, the workers who moved your goods, the police who protected your factory, the public schools that educated your employees were all in this together. And this is what rich dudes seem to overlook or turn a blind eye to. I'm a great big success, and you guys, the rest of you, need to pull yourselves up by your bootstraps, which of course is an impossibility of physics, but nonetheless it's one that's beloved by the right. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, prove yourselves.
You can do it, you know, too, if you just work hard. There's still, it's kind of baffling at times how much widespread faith there still is in trickle-down economics.
God, yeah. And you can see how it took hold, because it's just such a seductive theory that suggests that by magic, everything that had been being achieved by 20th century Western democracies through a decent application of the welfare state and a reasonably large involvement of government in business, the delusion that the neoliberals clasped to their collective breast was, you can just let the market decide for yourself. You take the government right out of this, and you let everything work it out. And as you say, the wealth will trickle down. And it was a bust. It was utterly a bust. And you can demonstrate it over and over. But for the true believers, of whom there are many, and a large chunk can be found any day of the week, ruminating and scowling on LinkedIn. The attitude is that we just haven't let the market thrive enough for the theory to be proven. You know, government still got its messy hands all over everything. Look, the reality is that for the golden post World War II years, where you had a very large state and very high tax, graded taxation, you were able to achieve exactly what Elizabeth Warren described, a collective endeavour that did bloody good things, that built hydro schemes here and put a rocket on into space and took people to the moon in the US, and a vast array of technological and scientific progress that began in labs funded by governments before that found its way out into the private sector. The internet's included in that, by the way.
Do you
which
think
all the tech bros are thriving on today.
Oh, aren't they? Do you think people, men like these, are dangerous? Like, do they pose...
Do they have sway?
...a threat to our democracy?
Yeah, it feels like it. Because, you know, where we've got to now is that having fulminated for a long time about government and tax, it's sort of gradually dawned on them that actually if they can get hold of the megaphone as well and try and influence the debate, then you can have more malign effect. And for that, the granddaddy of them all is Rupert Murdoch. But any of these other guys, like Jeff Bezos, like Peter Thiel, like Elon Musk, who in more recent times have turned their cruel gaze towards this, are having a demonstrably malign effect. Principally, Elon Musk taking Twitter and turning it into an absolute cauldron of hate. I mean, that was emerging there, but he just gave it nourishment to a degree that makes it utterly uninhabitable. I left it ages ago now, and but you still see its influence, you know, spreading far and wide, and the hate that it fosters.
There's a lot to be said on, like, just getting off social media at this point, because I feel like every social media platform in recent times has just been so toxified. Like, it just
sucks. Yeah, I mean, it's baked in, and, you know, Facebook was designed by Zuckerberg and his university pals to stalk women, for God's sake.
Ridiculous.
You know, that's the foundational attitude of this thing, and all of it is predicated on dopamine hits and creating silos of distorted views that can then be reinforced and validated amongst one another, and the disinformation that it aids is just colossal. So yeah, huge problem. And I am mindful that, you know, I think back again to Murdoch in the much earlier days of the internet. You had MySpace was the biggest game in that field, and he poured a shitload into buying it, and it went nowhere. These things can over time rise and fall and disappear. The tricky thing we have here is that with this an entire weaponization of the whole thing through AI and you know, a disproportionate amount of influence in a relatively small collection of hands, all of the notions that we did have about rule of law and separation of powers and democratization, all of those start to look a little bit threatened, because if anything gets more powerful than the state, then it can tell the state to go shove it.
Yeah, and it's the commodification of our information.
Yeah. So when you have an unholy alliance of, you know, those media platforms and the tech bro dominance that AI may be delivering them, you're ending up with something really quite worrying. And look, there are contradictions abounding in this. There's a really good piece in the New Yorker profiling Sam Altman that recalls the earliest days of AI, where Musk was, who can be a real catastrophist, was saying, you know, this is a real threat to civilization, and we need to have a non-profit entity steering this wisely for the protection of humanity, which are laudable aims, but when they're being said by Elon Musk, you just don't quite know. He's a contradiction, I think, is the truth of it. But he was right. We've got a terrible problem. It doesn't mean we can't overcome it. This is the great arc of humanity is ever upwards in the very longest run, but within individual lifetimes, it can be sustained misery, and that's the worry here. I think that we might just have a long stretch of misery ahead of us. Millie and Rosetta, I'm sorry to say it.
Well, let's hope not.
I feel like we might need to do like a seance or like an exorcism after this chat.
I need to go and read Shoshana Zuboff's Surveillance Capitalism again. That's a good read for the tech ethics nerds out there.
With a good beat as well.
Yeah. We'll play some ravey music to lift everyone's spirits. Hey, thank you so much, David, for joining us for another political commentary. Have an awesome rest of your day, and we'll chat with you soon.
Thanks, David.
Cheers.
Kakite, bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.